This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show. From Wintergreen Nursery Landscaping and Florist, here's the Commissioner of Dirt, Mike Winters, and the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Well, good afternoon. You all right there, Mike?
Yeah, why wouldn't I be? I'm sitting in a nice, warm little studio here and got out of the blizzard out there in the parking lot.
It is chilly, 47, 36, they say, tonight.
Well, you know, what really makes it chilly is the rain and the stuff, because it was raining lightly right now when I came in, so it kind of goes through you a little bit.
Go right down to the bone.
Yeah, right. Anyway, this is a show about lawns, gardens, and plants, and all kinds of landscape things. And if you have a question about your yard, your garden, your indoor plants, or whatever, feel free to call.
Are we going to talk about Christmas trees?
Yeah, I don't want to.
You don't want to? All right.
I don't know. I might. There's not very many left.
one got burned up.
Yeah, I know. But the number for questions is 673-4464. Any questions, fair game, so I won't cut you off or yell at you or anything like that. Today I'm going to speak about indoor plants and their care and the things that we can do with them and have and decorate and, you know, why go outside and garden when you can do it right in your living room, for crying out loud, you know? Hey, that's a good thing. But did you know that citrus trees, oranges, lemons, those kinds of things, can be grown in Oregon? And they can. Yes, if they are protected from winter weather, they all will thrive, and they will actually produce oranges, lemons, and those kinds of things. And if you plant it in a container, which you should, an orange tree can be a patio tree in the summer. You put it out on the deck, and it can stay out there. And when the weather gets cold, you know, October-ish or whatever, somewhere in November maybe, they make a great plant for the living room. You know, you put it by a big window in the living room, and it's there. It looks good. It's a tree, indoor tree. And they can get, you know, pretty good size eventually. They're not fast growers, especially in the in a container. They grow a little bit quicker in the ground, but the problem is, and I've got a story about planting one in the ground here a little bit later, and they look good. And if you leave them outside, a freeze will damage them severely, or kill them, one of the two. And I know that from experience, because that happened to me, and I'll tell you a little story about that.
Okay.
Oh, gosh, I guess 10 years ago, maybe a little bit longer, I had a big orange tree in a very large redwood box. A friend of mine who was my botany professor in college, he grew a lot of them. And he was retiring and moving north to Salem, and he says, hey, I want you to have this tree. And it was, I thought, whoa, man, this is a big tree. And the tree itself was probably in the box, 3 feet tall, 3 feet wide, just loaded with fruit.
Wow.
Yeah. And I took it to the nursery and put it right outside one of the greenhouses. And, you know, it was outside from like April to, you know, first part of November when it starts, the temperature starts
dipping
down. You know, you just keep it. And what it was the mama plant that we used for cuttings to grow more lemons and oranges. And anyway, the box was really large, big, heavy, redwood box. And it took at least two guys to pick it up and move it into the greenhouse or, you know, somewhere like that. I mean, probably easy 200 pounds with the tree in it and everything else. Well, one year, I had it about 3 years, and one year we had one of those sudden Arctic fronts come down in mid-October, and it was sitting outside. And, you know, they were saying it's going to get cold, blah, 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 but I didn't know it was going to get down in the 20s, and it did. And it was like 20 degrees, and without a warning. I mean, it's going to be cold, okay. Yeah. But then, boom, it got cold, baby. And this was October. And so Mama Orange Tree died very quickly.
Oh, she didn't like that.
No, she didn't like that at all. But all the small ones that I had already propagated, they were in the greenhouse, they did fine. Mm-hmm. And even though the greenhouse, they're heated to a certain extent, but normally when it gets that cold outside, it gets down to about 39 in the greenhouse, even with the heat on, because mm-hmm. it's a plastic greenhouse. And but anyway, Mama Orange Tree was about 10 years old when she bit the frost. You know, that was, oh boy. Well, I have a client now. That planted, bought a tree from me. Actually, it was a lemon tree that he bought from me, and he planted it in the ground, but I didn't know it. He just bought it in a pot, blah, blah, blah. So we went to do some landscape work for him and on a different part of his property, and we got to talking, and he said, hey, you want to see that lemon tree I bought from you a few years ago? And I said, yeah, well, sure, where is it? Yeah. He said, I got it over here. And I said, it's planted in the ground? He says, oh, yeah. And it survived, you know. So we go over there. And what he had done, he had built a small portable greenhouse around the tree.
Okay.
Yeah, it was probably about as big as this room. What's this room, 10 by 10, something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, something like
yeah,
that.
It was about that, and it was probably maybe 12 feet tall.
Perfect for that tree.
Yeah, absolutely. And this tree was about 8 feet tall and probably 6 feet wide. Wow. And what he had was it was a wooden frame, and then he put these plexiglass windows in and he had slots, and and when it got cold, he would just put the plexiglass windows into the wooden frame, and he had one or two large light bulbs that he turned on for heat. And and it lived all those years outside, planted in the ground in Douglas County, but he protected it, and it did well. And then when spring rolled around, he'd just take the plexiglass windows off and stack them to the side.
And use them again.
Yeah. And there was, and this was a lemon tree, this one was. And it, when we were looking at it, it probably had, oh gosh, a wheelbarrow full of lemons on
wow.
it.
Oh, wow.
That's how prolific it was. And it was beautiful, gorgeous. And that's been, oh gosh, that's probably 7-8 years ago I saw it last.
I bet it's producing more.
I'm tempted to drive down there. It's kind of in a mobile home park there by the South Umpqua River. I'm right out of Winston. And one of these days, I think I'll just go ahead.
Just pop in there.
Pop in there and see how the tree's doing.
Hey, how's your lemon tree?
Hey, okay. You know, it was very unique, and the plexiglass windows were, you know, it was very, very nice. He was a carpenter, so
it was professionally.
It was a good professional look to it.
Yeah,
and I thought, boy,
the nice. Mobile homeowners in Park couldn't get upset about it.
No, they couldn't. But you know, and the windows, like I said, they just slid out. Kind of, I think he had little. Plastic handles, and you just kind of pick them up and slide them, and he just did
make it easy for him.
Oh, yeah. So when the cold weather, you know, October, you pay attention to the – and they're good even at, you know, 35, as long as it doesn't get down to 30 degrees, they'll probably survive. Mm. They'll be damaged leaves and things like that, but they're good. But I learned a great lesson. Mine stay in the greenhouse all winter long. Oh, gosh.
Save the mama.
Yeah, save the mama, and I didn't, baby. I let her freeze to death. Oh, gosh. Yeah. And like I said, when he bought the tree from me, it was only about 2 feet tall. Maybe 3.
Yeah.
You know, a small tree. And, you know, 7 years later, it's like, boom. It's just like, it ought to be in an orchard, you know. But a little winter protection goes a long way, and you can have success with really any type of citrus if you prepare for winter survival. It's that simple. And the higher the heat, of course, the more it grows and produces. So if you've got it in a heated place, and my small ones, even my small lemon trees that we grow, the tree itself might be a foot tall and 6-8 inches wide, a little skinny, just barely, you know, a year and a half, 2 years old, and it'll have lemons on it.
A little baby one.
Yeah, well, they get pretty good size, and the next thing you know, those little tiny branches are sagging way down with these lemon trees on it.
Pick me.
Yeah, pick me or do something. But so you can do that. You can have that in your home in the winter and put it outside on the patio or on the deck in the summer, and it just grows in a beautiful tree. And they are evergreen. They don't lose their leaves unless they freeze. Yeah. So.
Well, all bets are off then.
Yeah, all bets are off on that one. But there are some other requirements for success. Number one is drainage. They don't like swamps. They need, you know, very fast drainage, whether it's in a container or in the ground. In a container, you know, you just put a good potting soil mixed with some fine grind mulch or something. So when the water hits, it just, you know, drains through. Yeah. It stays damp, but it drains, you know, the vast majority of it drains through.
Yeah.
And if you put it in the ground, you want to mound it up a little bit and build your portable greenhouse over it. But, you know, just mound the plant and give it that good soil, and then you're going to have that good positive drainage. And, you know, it could be a mix of sand, bark, potting soil, peat moss, you know, all well mixed together. And they just don't do well in wet dirt. It's... And our clay around here, when it gets wet, it stays wet for months and months. And I've said this, you know, hundreds of, maybe thousands of times already. Wet ground kills the roots, rots the roots, kills the tree. It's that simple.
Simple, yeah.
So watering, of course, is important. And a newly potted tree, water maybe twice a week. Very lightly.
That's easy to remember.
Yeah, maybe. And some people look at the top of the soil and say, "Oh, it's dry, so yeah, the water." But an inch down, it's damp. Two inches down, it's almost wet. And so consequently, the overwatering, especially on a citrus, will kill it. So maybe twice a week, once a week. It just depends. You have to kind of figure that out as you're growing it. And like I say, always feel the soil first. And if it's dry, give it a good watering. If it's wet or damp, forget it. Skip it. And if you build a portable greenhouse, it will need the same soil mix and less water.
And there you go.
You know, it's
a win-win again.
It's a win-win. So, fertilizing. Okay, you fertilize, say, 3 times a year. Lightly in the spring, lightly in June, and lightly in September. You just want to do, like I say, if it says, you know, a tablespoon per whatever, go a half a tablespoon. Or if it says three tablespoons to a gallon of water, go 1.5 tablespoons to a gallon of water. Always go light because you can always add more. Mm-hmm. And you can see it. As you see how the tree grows, you can see, okay, it looks a little anemic. I'll give it a shot. You know, that's an easy thing to do. But 3 times a year is about right. And then as the tree gets older and hardier and larger, and that you increase that because the root systems are increased in that. And remember, you can always add more, but too much is going to do damage.
It's not a good thing.
Right. We need a break, don't
we? We do.
Okay. We'll be back.
And when we come back, I got a lame Christmas joke for you.
A what?
A lame Christmas joke.
A lame Christmas
joke. It's family friendly.
Okay. On the air, we're going to say it?
Yes.
Okay. You all prepare.
That's coming up and more on the other side of the break. Mike Winters, Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All righty, we're at 4:23, and you ready for your lame Christmas joke of the day?
Okay, go ahead. This is a family show.
Yeah, No. This is up and up.
Okay.
What do you get when you eat Christmas ornaments?
I have no idea.
Tinselitis.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, that's lame. Tinselitis. Oh, goodness. I'll have to tell that to somebody sometime, I guess. Anyway, I've been talking about indoor plants and how to keep them alive and not kill them.
Or tinsel.
You know, don't leave them outside in the freeze for sure. Yeah. And I just talked about the fertilizing part and how often you should do it and how lightly you should do it so that you don't kill your tree. And then sunburn. You know, you put it, like I said earlier, you can put these things outside in the backyard, on the patio, on the deck, whatever, for the summer. And that's fine. But, you know, if you put these smaller trees in full sun from dawn to dusk, it's not really needed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this past summer when we had all 100-degree days mm-hmm. and stuff like that,
yeah.
you put something that's been in the house for, say, 4 months out in that kind of weather, and there's a bit of a detrimental effect on the leaves.
Takes its breath away.
And goes, whoa, what is this? Where did we go?
Yeah.
But, you know, the best bet is like morning sun to, say, midday, and then shade in the hottest part. So if you have morning sun, afternoon shade, that's like a perfect situation for it. It'll grow, it'll be healthy, it'll look good, and it won't burn up. And one thing about a citrus tree that I learned over time, in full all day sun, there can be a tendency to burn the bark if it's in a container. In the ground, it's a different story because there's a different growth habit. It's a more vigorous tree. It's a stronger tree. You know, it's got a better root system. Mm. It's got tougher bark, you know, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it's in a container, you got to protect it a little bit. And then when it gets cold, you bring the container in for the winter, and it's okay. And like then pruning, like any fruit-bearing tree, it needs light pruning to produce fruit. In other words, if you got a whole bunch of skinny little branches and it's, you know, a lot of leaves on there and very little fruit, it's because there's too many little stinky branches on there. So cut out some of them, leave the stronger ones, and maybe top them a little bit, and just like a regular orchard out here in Garden Valley, and you'll get much more fruit, and it'll be better, and you can actually eat this stuff. So,
and that's the name of the game.
That's, yeah. I mean, not only are the lemons or the oranges picturesque hanging on your tree, on your deck, and your neighbors come over for a barbecue and go, wow, where'd you get the orange tree? Oh, I've been raising it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's my orange grove, and there's my lemon grove. And you can have all those things.
Just arrived from Florida.
Yeah. And also in pruning, as I've said in the past, air circulation is very important. When you have any kind of tree, but a fruit tree especially, that has too many branches, too many leaves, and there's no air to circulate, that's a good place for bugs or bacteria to settle in and do some damage to your tree. That's why you should open it up so that there is air circulation, so that sunlight can get in there, and there's no place for a bug or a bacteria or some kind of disease to, you know, camp out and get established in your tree. So, and so in Douglas County in Oregon, or just about anywhere, you can grow oranges, you can grow lemons, you can grow limes, tangelos, whatever. I think I know what a tangelo is.
Is that tangerine like?
Yeah, I think there's something half and half something. Or
cousins,
I'm not
cousins
sure.
Maybe.
Yeah, and kumquats right here in Douglas County. So.
Oh, I know a lot of those.
Yeah, you can just have a regular citrus farm and do it in pots, and you'll be okay, or portable greenhouses. But and I've even seen in some places large banana trees growing quite well here. Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yes, I am very serious.
Wow.
I have a client out in Melrose area.
Yeah.
And his next door neighbor is a deputy sheriff. And they got like 5 acres apiece, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I was looking over at the neighbor's yard one day, and he says, and my client says, "See those banana trees back there?" And I went, "Whoa, they are banana trees. They were 10, well, they were a good 12 feet tall."
Huh.
And he had probably 6 of them in his backyard. And I said, And they live? He says, yeah, they when it gets cold, the leaves, you know, brown up and fall off. But the next spring, they just come on back, and he actually gets bananas on them. Mm. But his bananas, because this is not the tropics, mm-hmm. his bananas are very small.
Oh, okay.
And they're really not, they are edible, but they're not like what you buy in Safeway or Freddy's or something like
they're
that.
They're like bite-sized, but
yeah,
they're not
bite-sized, cold. Bite-sized bananas. But they will grow here. And
I'll be darned.
Yeah. And so he got one from his neighbor, and he planted it, not in the landscape job we did it, but he planted it in one of these, up on his bank above his driveway and the weeds, and it grows. It's probably, I don't know, 5 feet tall.
And that's something.
Yeah. And he doesn't, you know, and it's bad ground, clay, clay with rocks, and you know, not like what we would plant. He just dug a hole and stuck it in. And
yeah.
That was good to go.
My dad's method, yeah.
Yeah, your dad's method, just like that. But so
speaking
banana,
of which, it's his birthday today.
Well, happy birthday, Dad. And grow a banana tree for him. But these banana trees, they survived the snowmageddon. Some of the branches broke off. And because their branches, you know, the leaves are wide.
Mm-hmm.
And long, maybe 5-6 feet long and a foot wide. And so when that heavy snow hit, it snap, snap, snap.
Yeah.
But the main stem was not damaged. And the following, when it warmed up, the following spring, boom, brand new branches.
Oh, geez.
So, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I was very impressed. I thought they were just, you know, Florida or mm-hmm, Southern mm-hmm. California or Texas or something
or
like that.
America.
South America, yeah, exactly. But they were doing well, and snowmageddon didn't kill them. So, and you can grow banana trees indoors as well, but you need a very large container and a big roof, so because they will grow tall. They will grow tall really quick. Now, should you decide to put something like that in your home, you want to dedicate a room in your home for growing indoor plants like the citrus stuff. That I've already talked about, with a window and a lot of light.
Mm, okay.
They do need light, not just to produce fruit, but also just to be healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just lamps, but windows, you know, or skylights or something like that.
They need the real thing.
They do much better with the real thing.
Yeah.
And there are three aspects of light that influence plant growth, and it's kind of interesting. The intensity of the light, and the duration and the quality of the light. Mm. So, you know, intense, is it super bright and hot, mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. just kind of dull and cold? The duration, you have it on for 2 hours a day, or 6 hours a day, or 10 hours a day.
Yeah.
And the quality of the light. And I didn't understand what they were referring to on quality, but the intensity is the amount of light that a plant receives on its leaf surfaces.
Okay.
So that's what the intensity is, and that has a bearing on the food production, on the fruit production in the long term.
Makes sense.
Yeah. And the photosynthesis, of course, is the food manufacturing process of the plant. It's the engine of the plant, and it definitely needs that light to produce anything. Basically, no light, no food, no life.
That's it in a nutshell.
Right, it in a nutshell. And they just can't survive in the dark. They starve. They starve to death in the dark. Mm. I mean, there's no light. Like us, if we were in a dark room all the time, we wouldn't live very long.
No.
So, that's
true. We
would. Yeah. But any kind of a light source will work from sunlight or to grow lights. But if you have the best of both worlds, mm-hmm. if you have a southern exposure with a big picture window or something like that where it gets a lot of light all day, that would be the perfect place to put a citrus, indoor mm-hmm. citrus tree, or, you know, orange or a lemon or a kumquat or whatever. Banana tree, maybe, but you better have a tall roof for that banana tree.
A mansion.
Yeah, and that natural light will just make that that tree grow more quickly. Now the fake lights we got here and plant grow lights and that stuff, it'll keep them alive and they'll actually produce fruit, but it's a poor substitute for real sunlight. And there's more to it scientifically, and it would take a long time to explain, but take my word for it.
You can't replace Mother Nature.
No, you can't. You can try to copy it and see where you go, but
it don't work.
Yeah, yeah. But lots of light, you know, the plant will grow quickly. And with a little light, the plant just grows slowly. And there's some other criteria there that the leaves, you can look at leaves, and if they're not, you know, vibrant and green, and if it's only getting 2-3 hours of light a day, mm-hmm. the plant is, that's the problem. I mean, it could be over water, it could be under fertilizer, but it's usually it's a light problem, and you need to either move it to a new window or get an artificial light, a plant grow light or something like that, and install it some way so that it has enough light to grow. Natural light, of course, is the least expensive type of light. You don't have to pay for it.
Not yet.
Not yet. I'm sure they're working on a way to tax it. And and it's the most beneficial source for plant growth.
Yeah.
Now, artificial light comes from like fluorescent lighting and is the most common type. You know, that's you can buy that at just about any, like Home Depot and places like that.
Yeah.
If they have a garden section. And those big box stores carry all that kind of stuff. Whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, I have no idea because I don't do it. But that is the most common, that fluorescent type, and it's also the least expensive. And but not only does the plant receive light, but it gets a little bit of heat also from the fluorescent bulbs.
Nice. Yeah,
there's some heat. Mm-hmm. It's not enough to burn it, but it keeps it warmer.
Yeah.
And there are many sources of plant lights on the market, so you could go nuts shopping for these things. But do your research before you purchase. Talk to somebody that already has some kind of a setup like this, and they can say, yeah, that don't get Brand X because Brand X will burn out in a short time, doesn't do a good job, but, you know, go here and get this brand, and, you know,
this one works better.
Yeah, it works better. It's a little more expensive, but if you want results, this is what you get.
Worth your money.
Yep. You got your hand on the trigger. What?
We got to do this.
Okay.
One more time around. We'll be back.
Got to pay for the airtime, I guess.
Yep. Speaking of lights, News Radio.
Got to keep them on, don't we?
1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Oh, my. Things that go on off mic.
Yeah, right. And we are back, and I'm talking about indoor plants and how to grow them, how to keep them alive.
And our phone number.
And our phone number is 673-4464. So if you have a question, you're sitting in your car and you just pick up your cell phone and dial 673-4464, ask your question, we'll get you on the air instantly.
It's that easy,
yeah. So I've been talking about artificial light, you know, like fluorescent lights and all that kind of stuff, which are good and they work, but it's not the optimum because you need a little bit of natural sunlight. I know we don't have any right now, but what the heck. So, but insufficient light,
yeah.
If you got that kind of light, it causes a plant to grow slowly, number one. And when it's growing slowly, of course, it needs less water and little fertilizer because otherwise you'd pop it right out of the box and it would crawl over dead. But the growth of the plant will be affected with insufficient light. Growth will be... on the plant will be stretched out, you know, you'll have a tall, skinny, spindly plant instead of something that's full of leaves and all that and looking good and equal.
We have a phone call.
I am ready.
Hey, you're on the air with Mike Winters.
Good afternoon, you guys. Hi, Mike.
Hello, John.
Do you remember when you were down there as a commissioner, just going to the county to do business? Did you remember back in the back of the first and the second floor, there was a set of banana trees?
Yep, I remember
and
that.
Do you remember that one year they even bore bananas?
No, I don't remember that, but I believe they did.
and I'm not lying to you.
I know that.
Yeah.
But they were in huge, huge pots, and they had that great big gigantic window in that breezeway between the two buildings, correct?
Yes.
Yep.
And it probably still wasn't enough. It needed bright white light.
Yeah.
That's the ultimate outside light.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
well, they were alive, but they didn't look what I would say
healthy.
They weren't vigorous,
right? They weren't real healthy looking.
No, it was obviously a mercy cook culture, and just the way it is.
Yeah, I remember.
Have you ever heard of dichondra?
Oh yeah.
Have you ever grown a dichondra lawn?
Not here in Oregon, no.
My very first lawn, I put in a fescue lawn for my father in his original house in 1964, and I put my very first dichondra lawn into his new house in 1962, and it was absolutely amazing and interesting. For folks that don't know what a dichondra lawn is, may I take a try, Mike?
Mm-hmm.
They're little round petals. Just the whole floor surface is just round petals. Do you know if they generated nitrogen? Were they a legume?
I don't know, John,
because
we don't do dichondra here, so I haven't had much experience with it. But I know that in like Southern California, that's what they grow. Dichondra.
Well, I'd read up on it back when I was a little kid, and so I went with that for putting his lawn in, and everybody marveled at it when they saw it. I'm 68, and that was 1962. So you know. A long time ago.
Yes, it was. Okay, sir. Well, thank you for your phone call. I appreciate it.
I appreciate you very much, Mike. Thanks.
Okay. Bye-bye, John.
Thank you. All righty. That was interesting.
Yeah, dichondra. I remember my dad planting a dichondra lawn, and he was so proud of it, and I was a little kid, you know, six years old. I didn't care. It still stained my pants, you know, when you played in it.
Yeah, yeah.
Short grass.
It worked.
But it's kind of like a clover, like a one-leaf clover three or four-leaf clover.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Yeah. So, anyway, I was talking about the lighting, the lighting that you would get and the plant that you would grow with insufficient light would be tall, spindly, kind of ugly, and because it's reaching, and there's nothing, you know, it can do except reach, trying to get more, and it can't. But then it would have small, tiny leaves, you know, smaller than normal, and leaves that would often turn yellow and then drop off. Mm. And if it had flowers, it would be, you know, the flowers would be pale, or there'd be no flowers at all. Do we have another call?
We do have another call. Hi there. You're on with Mike Winters.
Well, good afternoon. I just wanted to make a comment on the dichondra lawns. My sister's mother-in-law moved up here from Southern California, uh-huh. and she lived on one of the streets over there off of Broad Street.
Uh-huh.
And she had a dichondra lawn for many, many years.
Really?
Yes. And not a leaf would dare land on that lawn without her intercepting it. So.
And it held up to the wintertime temps.
It did. I don't know how well. I don't recall that. But, yeah, she had it there for years until she sold the home. And
I'll be darned. Huh. Well, I'll have to look into that. I'll have to do a little bit of research on it and see if there's a type of dichondra that'll be successful here in Douglas County.
That'd
be something interesting. Well, thank you. Curiosity. I appreciate that,
you're
that
welcome.
Info.
All right.
Bye.
Thank you.
See, I even learned stuff on this show.
There you go, dichondra.
Dichondra will grow here. There's a lady that had one.
I wonder if it grows in China.
I don't know. Probably parts of it. But I'm talking about the potted citrus here with insufficient light. And, of course, if you have insufficient light, it eventually gives up the ghost and it just won't do it. So light is extremely important. We got another call.
We do have another call. Hi, you're on with Mike.
Dichondra comes from China.
Oh, it does?
Well, thanks, John.
Yes.
Why don't you go shopping around for me and see who sells it here in Oregon? We'll try to grow one.
There you go.
I guess, yes, I'm willing to pursue that. I know that. It was off of, I believe, it was on Wide Street, I think, off of Broad Street.
I'll be darned.
And it was vigorous. I was absolutely shocked because I was sure that, I mean, there have been a number of years where we've never hardly even gotten a frost here.
Yeah.
And that's probably the determining factor in dichondra. Flourishing or not flourishing.
Well, that's what I always understood, that frost would kill it, that if it had a heavy frost or snow or something like it would die.
You're not wrong. It would. It's just that, you know, down in Fresno and Hanford, there was never any hard frost. And my father was trying to show off for rich people, so who knows?
Yeah.
Well, I'm gonna look around still, do some research, and see if there's anybody here that has a hybrid type of dichondra that maybe will take winter time.
You know, it's 45, 50 years later, and anything's possible, Mike.
I know that. Well, thank you again.
Especially if you use Mr. Google.
Mr. Google. Yeah, you use Mr. Google. I don't like Mr. Google. Thank you, John.
He makes me look smarter than I am.
Okay.
Thanks, Mike.
All of us. All right. Thanks, John.
We'll see you, buddy.
Bye-bye.
Oh, gosh. I'm learning too much about my dichondra.
Dichondra. It comes from China. Uh-huh. How about that?
I don't know. I didn't know that.
I didn't either. We'll be back in a couple of minutes with Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show. News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Well, can you believe it, Mike? This is already the final segment for the hour.
The final segment, and I've got two more pages of information and notes here, but I'll use that for another time.
Alrighty.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm talking about indoor plants, how to grow them, how to make them live, how to kill them, you know, what to do with them. And here's the other part. Too much light on an indoor plant can also hurt it. It causes the plant to wilt or to develop bleached out leaves or even get brown spots on the leaves, too much light.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you put it on for, I don't know, 18 hours a day or 12 hours a day.
Kind of burns it out. Huh?
Yeah, it burns it out, exactly. Yeah. So it needs some darkness to recuperate.
Sounds like me.
Yeah, so if you... like if you put your indoor plants outside when the good weather is going, don't put them in full sun. Morning sun, afternoon shade is best. I mean, that's your best bet. Because that hot afternoon, if it's 92 degrees or 98 degrees on an indoor plant, it's going to do some damage.
Yeah, it ain't going to work. Yeah.
Right. And just, you know, watch the plants carefully and just don't let them get scorched. Take them in. Like I say, afternoon shade's your best. I've got some plants at the nursery we have on the east side of our building that when the sun comes up in the summer, it's just shining right into it. But by noon, 1 o'clock, it's in shade.
Okay.
Or, you know,
so that works.
So it works. You know, I've got camellias. I've got bonsai. I've got... mainly bonsai. I don't want them to cook. I don't want them to heat up too much because they're in a very small pot and they're their root system is not capable of being in the full sun, and with that full
absorbing
sun,
all that heat.
Yeah, for, you know, 10 or 12 hours.
Yeah.
Or however the sun is. So don't put them in a full sun, morning sun. That's it. That's the best. So if you take an indoor plant from a home that is 70 degrees most of the time, and you put it outside and it's 90 degrees, that plant's going to suffer in some way.
Yeah, what are you thinking?
Yeah, exactly. But people do it because, oh, it's sunny, let's put the plants outside, wash them off.
Whatever. Sure.
And you know, the same thing happens with people. You get too hot too quick for too long. You go, oh, what's wrong with me? It's too stinking hot. That's what's wrong with me. But indoor plants, for the most part, are tough. But you got to use common sense in their care. You know, too much of anything, water, fertilizer, heat, cold, or anything else is going to be hard on an indoor plant. Mm-hmm. They're naturally grown in the wild in a very temperate type of climate. So you can't give them the extremes and expect them to survive. So to get started with indoor plants, here's a few of the tough ones to try, and you can't really go wrong unless you really didn't listen to anything I said. But aloe vera looks like an upright cactus with no spines to stick you.
Yep.
It's a healing plant. Like if you burn your finger or you cut your finger or a minor scrape or something, all you do is just break off a chunk of that and rub the sap or the gel that's very kind of thick, and you just rub the on your cut or your burn or whatever, and the pain goes away, and it heals much more quickly. And we have one in our house. We have them at the nursery, and we've been using them, and we used them on our kids rather than take the kids to the doctor. Just rub them with an aloe vera plant, and they get better real quick.
It's a lot cheaper.
A lot cheaper, yeah. But that's a good one. And it's medicinal, for crying out loud. And it's easy to grow. Little water, good light. Temperature range is like 60 to 75 degrees. And it's a native of South Africa where, you know, it's not in a desert situation or anything like that. Another one, an easy one, is cactus.
Oh, yeah.
Cactus. Put it in a sunny window. You can't hurt a cactus.
Yeah.
And leave it alone. Very little water with great drainage. You know, think sand when you're talking drainage with a cactus. And if you try to pet this plant, it's going to stick you.
It's telling you to leave it alone.
Leave me alone. Here, I'll try one of these sharp things. But there's many types to choose from, and they don't grow fast. And water, you know, watering and stuff, maybe once a month kind of deal, and not more than that. Are we out of time?
No, we have another phone call.
Oh, another one.
Ooh, hey there.
The jackpot today, baby.
Yeah, absolutely. You're on the air with Mike Winters.
It's that silly village idiot. Mike, one of the things you can do on that hot application for the exposure from the west to the east and stuff, and it works for bonsai also, is to use a shallow dish filled with gravel pebbles and put the water into the pebbles and then set the bonsai or the big pot. The more you want the water to get into it, you swivel the pot to where it goes down into the gravel. The less you want to get the water in, but just to have the cool moisture, you set it on top of the pebble.
I realize that, John. I've been doing bonsai for about 40 plus years.
I didn't mean to imply anything but that, Mike.
That's good advice. I mean, that's one way of doing it. You bet.
It's one of 10 ways.
Yes.
And you're right.
You're right.
Thank you, sir.
Thank
you're
you.
Welcome. Bye-bye, John.
What else you got on your list there?
Oh, I don't know. I was into the cactus.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're kind of neat. I used to have a guy that grew cactus, and he used to stop by the nursery, and he'd have these little tiny baby cactus, and I had no idea what they were or what their names were.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd buy a flat of them, and there would be like 16 in a flat, little 2-inch pots.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
But we hardly ever sold one. So my wife said, no more. You're not going to buy no more cactus from this guy. So he quit coming. I don't know. I wanted the cactus.
Do you still have the cactus?
Well, I have some around, yeah, but they're old and decrepit now. but cactus, you know, they're just unique. They're interesting. They're a no-brainer plant.
Yeah.
As long as you
absolutely.
Got good drainage and you don't water them to death, they just look good. And they have some of the most magnificent flowers. Those that do flower, I mean, bright reds, yellows, oranges, and all of a sudden you'll see this bump on the top of a cactus and say, what's wrong with that? Yeah. And the bump gets a little bit bigger, and then bingo, it opens up and there's this gorgeous flower.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, usually there's just one, maybe two, depends on the size of the cactus and how many arms it has. I've seen some folks here in the county that have some fairly large cacti, and they might have a 3 or 4 foot one in a big old pot, and when they're in bloom, they're just really, really beautiful, and I think they can live 1,000 years. I'm not sure. I know they can live hundreds.
A long time.
Yeah, they're really good like that. So try a cactus. If experiment, see what you can do best. The aloe vera is easy. The cactus is easy. There's an indoor tree that you can try, and it's a Norfolk Isle pine. Grows wild in Hawaii, like a Doug fir grows here. They're an indoor plant, definitely here. But it's a nice indoor tree, and it can get up, give it a good sized pot, and it can grow, 10 feet tall in your house if you got the ceiling.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right, that's going to wrap it up for you this afternoon.
Well, okay, I'm not out of information. I can do another hour if you want.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
We'll
okay.
Preempt the afternoon report.
Yeah, we don't need that, do we?
Nah, it's just.
Well, hey, thank you for listening. We'll be back next Wednesday. Thank you, John, for all your info.